Hi, I'm Mark Little. Welcome to the monthly session. This is the time when we get together each month to give you advice. During the month, I get questions from you, members of the program, and we answer the questions as they come in. But what I do for this session each month is I sort of pluck a handful of questions out and I sit down and decide, you know, which of these questions do I think might be the most relevant that we should take some time and really go through in a little bit more detail, go through it a little bit more slowly, something I think that would help most of you. And so you'll see this month, it's a question that's never come in before. So we'll spend some time going through one issue, but it's one question with tons of issues within it. So you'll see as we go along. And as I go through, if you've got questions, well, this is your chance, you know, get some live coaching. If you're dealing with an issue related to anything that we're implementing, for sure. So if we've sent you a module and you're struggling with implementing some aspect of it, well, send me a question through the system here. Or if you want to raise your hand, I'll figure out how to make you go live and we can talk it through. But either way, this is your chance to get some live advice on anything you're struggling with. If it's nothing to do with implementing this program, if you have an issue with a client, if you're having issues with your team, I'm going to say anything that you're dealing with, just let me have it. Let me hear what you're struggling with. I'd like to understand whatever your obstacles are, and we'll go through it here today. So let me get to the question that I have selected for us to review today. Okay, so this came in from a member of the program that has been in this program for 2 years. So the question is, in past sessions, you have shown a tentative list of certification requirements for this program, meaning the Advisor Pack Monthly program. And his question goes on to say, why did you create this certification? Who is the certification for? And will you ever finalize this certification? And can you walk through the whole thing, but very, very slowly, so to understand each certification requirement? And I'm going to go through real quickly and just answer a few of these so that you have a little bit of context. What I was saying in past months when I've shown this tentative certification, I call it a draft certification. We were actually approached by a company that's implementing this methodology for client service. In other words, They've got everybody in their company in the Advisor Pack Monthly program, and they, as a company, are trying to support them in implementing all the methods in our program. Okay, so they approached me and they said, "Hey, can you create an actual certification? In other words, metrics that as advisors are implementing your methodology, it's like a checklist. We can check it off. And as they go through your methods, and they check everything off, well, at the end, voila, you know, this company was saying we'd like to certify them." And so I said, okay. And I started working on a draft certification, and we're still working with them on this, but I decided to share it with the entire group, with you all, because I think it's a reasonably good idea. I mean, I've actually avoided doing certifications in the past because the only thing I could compare it to is like the CFP program. And I just remember back in the 80s and the 90s and the early 2000s, all the drama around and the bickering and the infighting and industry, you know, controversy over this certified financial planning designation. And I thought, oh my gosh, I don't want to get into that. I don't want all this bickering. I just want something simple. And so I kind of avoided the whole thing for about 15 years. But for some reason, the way that this question was couched to me by this company made perfect sense in this context. I can see that. You're a company, you're trying to create metrics for progress, for implementing a methodology that impresses you. I can see that. So I'm going to go through it with you. I'm going to basically start with how I came up with all this methodology. And because it comes up occasionally, you know, that, oh, you know, Mark Little can do all this, but maybe there's an idea that only Mark Little can accomplish all these things. And I listen to that and I laugh because the biggest truth around all of this is that there is nothing special about me. I didn't bring to the table any special skills. I did not come into this business with lots of connections or any connections, frankly. My background is solid middle class. My dad was a corporate executive in a big corporation, but you know, we didn't have multimillionaire friends. I mean, there was nothing like that. So when I came into this business, I was co-equal with every one of you. I came in just on my own merits, and I had to build all this on my own. I will also point out that it has been mentioned to me over the years by people above me, people that I reported to in corporations. Like I started off working for a Wall Street-based firm, so I had a branch manager, just like many of you had at the beginning of your careers. And, you know, my branch manager was fond of kind of reminding me that I actually came to the table with lots of problems. I'm an introvert. I have always had call reluctance when it came to, you know, because back in the 80s, I mean, they just threw people like me on the phone. Every advisor that was hired was just thrown on the phone and said, hey, go find some clients and just call these people cold. And I said, yeah, but we're interrupting their dinner. And they're like, that's fine. They're fine with it. Anyway, so it was a different era back in the 80s. But I'm telling you, I was not a clincher for doing this job. And my branch manager at the beginning would be happy to share with you how, you know, every week it was sort of like a weekly routine where I would come into the office. I'd have to sit down with my manager every week and kind of beg for my job because my performance was horrible those first couple of years. And it took me 2 years to figure this business out. Like how do you master the handful of skills that you have to master to do well at all this? So I thought I'll do something that I've never done before. I'm going to go through my timeline. Like, you know, I contend that there are only three or four skills that I've ever mastered. So if you in your business, you're struggling with something other than the three or four things I have figured out, I'll refer you to someone else. I'll refer you to Bill Bachrach, or you know, I'll refer you to other people that I've got in my Rolodex to send you to. Because back to the point of my skills, there are only three or four things that I really know how to do extremely well. Okay, so what's my timeline? Well, as I said, I spent the first 2 years in starvation mode. I had no idea how to acquire clients. I certainly did not know how to manage money. I foolishly, naively thought when I was hired by this Wall Street-based firm, you know, after graduating college, I'm going to go to work at this firm and they're going to teach me how to coordinate all the financial affairs and the wealth of, you know, of well-to-do families, you know. Boy, was that naive. They literally took me in. Yes, I had a bunch of training, but after the training and licensing, they pretty much just said, go out and get clients and you're on your own. And I didn't know what I was doing. So it took me 2 years to figure out how to acquire clients, how to manage clients, and so forth. After those 2 years, it went straight to the top. I spent 24 years as a top producer. I mean, not just an average producer, not just an okay producer, or what you might just say is a successful producer. No, top producer. So I spent 24 years at the top of, I call it production. You know, we're talking about when I say producer, well, this is how the industry labeled me. And all of us, you know, it's how much revenue are you generating per year? And so that was ended up being in our industry, the name of the game. And that's what they measured. You know, how many new clients are you acquiring every week? How many dollars of new revenue are you generating every week? Okay, so that's what I, you know, failed at for 2 years, but I was figuring it out how to do it my way. And once I figured it out, I went straight to the top producer, where I stayed. Now, some of these years are overlapping. So what I would say is it took me 3 additional years to figure out client service. All right. So, and it's not like a static timeline year to year. What I will say is, I was in just, if all you're measuring is revenue and production, 24 years. I mean, my records stand to this day. I mean, in every program I've ever been in, I was the number one producer when it came to new revenue, adding new clients, that sort of thing. So that record still stands today. It was 24 years for me because I stopped accepting clients in 2005. I mean, I basically closed my door to new clients, and then I ultimately sold that business. And so the metric stops as far as top producer in 2005, because that's when I stopped acquiring new revenue from financial advisory. But then sort of embedded in that, it's overlapping years, but it took me 2 years to figure out client acquisition. Then it took me an additional 3 years to figure client service. And I think it was mainly the way I had decided to define client service, because client service wasn't just, and my firm was trying to dictate this. They were saying, oh, well, you basically go through some kind of, you know, you sit down and you do some fact finding, and then as soon as possible, you recommend stocks and bonds and mutual funds. In other words, product sales. I mean, this is back in the 80s. I know things are different today, but so I was not satisfied with like doing a quick fact finder and then selling a bunch of stocks and bonds and mutual funds. Even back in the 80s, my definition of client service was exceeding client expectations. So it had less to do with our firm and our product offering and all this sort of, you know, what I'm able and skilled and what I'm licensed to do. I kind of set that aside. And the way I defined client service was, what would I need to do if I was consistently exceeding my clients' expectations? So for me, I sat down with the clients first and basically said, so what are you expecting from a relationship with an advisor like me? That was question number one. And then I paid a research company to go research, and this was years later when I had money to do it, but I hired a research company to go figure out a second question. What is the maximum that an affluent client is willing to pay? In other words, if the client is paying the most they're willing to pay, what is it that I'm giving them? Like, what is that? And so I spent basically 3 years studying, what do clients expect so that I can exceed those expectations? And what is the maximum they're willing to pay? And what am I doing for that? And so that those are the two questions that I answered. Took me 3 years, but I was delivering at that high level for 21 years. So that's the client service. And then after that, 2005, it's something we never talk about in this program, but in 2005, I sold my business, but I became a partner in the firm that acquired me. And that firm, you know, we went out and acquired 11 offices in 9 different states. But the bottom line is, and I work in mergers and acquisitions to this day, I spent the years after I sold my firm figuring out how to, in essence, increase the value of the business. And what I found out was that, you know, here we all are as advisors trying to grow organically, one client at a time. But the reality is, if you have the skills and the capital to do it, you can grow the value of your business significantly faster through mergers and acquisitions than you ever can through organic growth. So that's what I've been, if you wonder what am I doing now, that's what I've been doing since 2005. So for 18 years, mergers and acquisitions. But how do you translate all this timeline into you? Well, in my early years, I mastered how to eliminate limiting beliefs. I literally sat down and listed all the things that I thought just would not work or flaws in my skills that you know, I did an honest assessment, which nowadays we call limiting beliefs, but you could call them, I had self-doubts, okay? But I learned how to list them, address them, create a plan for eliminating them, and declare war on them. Okay. So if your issue is limiting beliefs, I would say I'm your guy. I need you to share with me in this program, what are your limiting beliefs? And if you're wanting to know what my original 7 limiting beliefs were, we can go through it in one of these sessions. Happy to do that. I'll show you what my limiting beliefs were back when I was starting out developing all this stuff. These were the things that stood in my way. And then I'll show you the 7 strategies that became what we're teaching today. In other words, these are the 7 strategies that declared war on my 7 limiting beliefs and got rid of them. Secondly, I learned how to acquire clients. So that is a unique skill. It's a skill set. And being an introvert with call reluctance took me a while to figure it out, but I mastered that, became a top producer for 24 years. So that's a skill set. The other thing is just then how to generate client referrals. So when I talk about, you know, client service being defined as exceeding client expectations, well, maybe that seems obvious to you, but I can tell you back in the 80s and 90s, my firm was fighting with me on this. You know, you don't want to sit down and figure out what clients want. They don't know what they want. You know, let us tell you what they want and let us drive your client service. And I was like, I'm not going to do that. I'm going to sit down with clients. I'm going to figure out what they need. I'm going to exceed those expectations. And that's how I'm going to define client service. So what does that do? What would you presume happens if you learn how to consistently exceed client expectations? Can you guess? Well, you generate tons of referrals. So I never asked for referrals. It was not part of my method. I was generating ample unsolicited client referrals. Okay. So what's an unsolicited client referral? Well, that's when the phone rings and some voice you've never heard of says, hey, some good client of yours said, I'd be crazy not to call you about my money problem that I've got here. Can we schedule a meeting to talk? So an unsolicited client referral is just you get a referral out of the blue and it's from one of your good clients. All right. So I know many of the advisors that we work with do receive referrals. I would say, I'm sure you do receive referrals. We're talking about something different here. What the skill is more of a question. It's, yes, I know you're receiving referrals and I know you're good at what you do. What I'm saying is, are you receiving enough referrals that if that's all you had to live on, you generate enough referrals to exceed the goals that you've set for yourself for revenue? So are you receiving enough referrals to drive your business? Or do you have to do some other kind of client acquisition? Okay. So I'm talking about building a level of client service that so far exceeds your client's expectations that you generate enough client unsolicited client referrals to drive the growth of your business so that you're always on track to your revenue goals. Okay, so how to generate client referrals. And then finally, this is not something that comes up very much from advisors, but if you're ever interested in how to double the business valuation on your practice, I'm your guy. I mean, this is what I've been doing for the last 18 years is take a business, figure out how through mergers, you can quickly ramp up the size of the business so that instead of being worth a multiple of, you know, whatever, 2, 3, 4, you know, it's worth, you know, 8, 9, 10, or 12, you know, how do you get a multiple for your business that's substantially higher than you could on your own? And so those are the four skills: eliminating limiting beliefs, how to acquire new clients, how to generate client referrals, and how to increase your business valuation. Now, the way I've taught this in the past is we call them the skills that you need to master as an advisor. We call these lead generation, lead conversion, and client service. So lead generation, I define as, and it's a question. Lead generation is asks the question, are you generating enough leads to potential clients that your calendar is filled each week with people who want to sit down and talk business with you? So I would just ask you, over the last 30 days, how many new potential clients have you just sat down with for the first time to explore maybe doing business together? If that's a problem for you, then your problem is lead generation. You need to focus on learning how to generate leads. I call this client acquisition. Okay. So the second skill is lead conversion. Well, you know, let's say you are sitting in front of in your office with a potential ideal client. In other words, from your perspective, you're kind of listening to their story and you're in your mind, you're doing the math and you're thinking, wow, this family that I'm sitting in front of, far as I can tell, they fit the profile of the client that I serve best. In other words, this is a potential ideal client. They just don't know it yet. Okay. So lead conversion is this: do you have the skill to convert a potential ideal client into an actual paying client that now is your ideal client paying you ideal client fees? So that's lead conversion. It's a skill. And you could be great at lead generation, but you could be horrible at lead conversion. And so if that's your obstacle, I need to know. Okay. Client service. Oh, back to lead conversion. For me, lead conversion is a process developed by Bill Bachrach called the financial roadmap. Okay. So when I sit down and conduct an initial client interview, I conduct the financial roadmap experience developed by Bill Bachrach. And so I would refer you back to Bill if your problem is lead conversion. Now, there are other methods of lead conversion. I just don't mess around with any of them because I spent 15 years trying everything out there. And then I literally stumbled across Bill Bachrach. And it is by far the most elegant, effective, streamlined lead conversion process ever developed for the financial services industry. I have no doubt about that because now here I am 40 years later, I'm aware of all the lead conversion strategies that are out there and tactics. And there's just nothing that comes anywhere close to Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap. So Bill Bachrach is your man for this, for lead conversion. Then client service, well, I've already beat that to death. That's what we're here to talk about today. Well, how do you know that you have accomplished the things that you need to accomplish to be, let's call it, certified at being able to consistently exceed clients' expectations? Well, let me just fly through the certification, then we'll go through each one by one. All right. So when I've gone through it before, it's been off of this slide and I just fly through it. It's the modules in the financial advisor, in the Advisor Pack monthly program. So when you've completed all the modules and you've implemented, let's say once you've implemented all the modules in the Advisor Pack monthly program, we call that financial advisor mastery. Okay. Ta-da, you've accomplished financial advisor mastery. So what is that? Well, number one, you build and lead a team of subject matter experts covering five areas of personal finance, and I'll go through it in detail. And the team needs to be at least three people. In my case, it's usually five subject matter experts covering five areas of personal finance, but more on that in a minute. So the 10 client deliverables, well, these are the 10 deliverables that those five subject matter experts actually deliver to clients. In other words, it's written down internally and we have an internal plan for delivering on these 10 client deliverables. Think of these as a couple of deliverables for each of the five areas of personal finance. And by the way, those five areas are financial planning, money management, insurance, tax, estate. So it's having five subject matter experts in those five areas. And just imagine for a moment, a couple of deliverables from these five areas. So it's 10 client deliverables delivered annually for your clients. And then CWLFS, that's shorthand in our program for, are you creating a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy updated at least annually for every ideal client? If so, you can check that box. Number four, have you implemented the three-meeting process? That's a meeting once every 4 months with every ideal client. And do you have all those meetings on the calendar currently for the next 12 months? In other words, are they all scheduled? Are all your meetings scheduled with your ideal clients going out 12 months at all times? Number five, 45 impressive above average action items per ideal client over the past 12 months. Okay, so what's this all about? All right, you've got five subject matter experts, right? What you're looking for is a minimum of 50 recommendations from each of those, from all five of those SMEs over the course of a year. And what I'm saying is the minimum standard for certification is, are you generating at least 45 impressive and above average action items for every ideal client every 12 months? So what's impressive? What's above average? We'll talk about that, but it's not routine recommendations and action items. Okay. And then finally, number six, it's we in our module here in the Advisor Pack monthly program, we give you an Excel spreadsheet. It's called the referability dashboard. And it's easy to maintain because you only update the referability dashboard when you receive a referral from an ideal client. Okay. So if you're getting a referral from local accountants, those don't count. If you're getting referrals from friends and relatives, those don't count. What we're counting, at least for the metric that matters, is of your ideal clients, how many of those people are referring? And it goes under the theory that, you know, referrals may not completely measure client satisfaction, but let's put it this way. A client who is providing you with referrals wouldn't do it unless you're exceeding their expectations. In other words, that we know the people that are referring to you, the clients, are more than satisfied with their service because they wouldn't risk tainting their reputation by referring you to someone if they weren't thrilled with the service that you're providing. So the monthly referability dashboard is simply a metric measuring client satisfaction through the number of referrals that you're actually receiving from the clients that you're serving. Okay. So let's go through them one at a time. Now, every time we finish a point, I'm going to go back through the ones we've covered up to that point. The goal today is for you to understand and assess what you've accomplished thus far in this program. I need you to understand the metrics of how you know if you've actually implemented the monthly projects that I send out to you each and every month in this program. Okay. So first things first, you have a team of three or more people covering all five areas of personal finance. So let's look at it. Now, this is our deliverables team structure. And when we talk about building a team, let me just say a couple of things. First position you need to fill is the administrative manager position. It's a payroll position. So yes, even if you can't afford it, you need to, as soon as you can figure out a way to make it happen, even if it's a part-time virtual assistant. In other words, you're so tight on money, all you can afford is a part-time virtual assistant. And when you start talking like that way, then you can get a skilled person, but just for a few hours a week, to in essence coordinate your team and make sure that you're not doing things that other people can do. So as you start generating revenue, just to do the tracking and to take the notes and do the tracking of the methods that I teach, very, very quickly, I would say after you have two ideal clients, you're already at the point where you can't do the admin on your own, or even if you could, it's not smart. You need to hire an administrative manager who's effective, and usually they charge by the hour, but you could pay a salary, whatever you can afford, and work out with them. Even if it's a spouse or a relative who just loves you and is willing to just help you part-time until you can afford to bring in an administrative manager. So the question is there anybody who loves and cares about you, that even if you can't afford an administrative manager, would be willing to help coordinate the administrative side of your business until you can afford to get someone into that place, into that spot? Okay, so you need, that is first. Like, you don't start building your team until that position's in place. And then you need to build a team of 3 to 5 subject matter experts. And yes, I'm talking about other than you. And you're saying, but wait, Mark, I'm the financial planner currently, or Mark, I'm the money manager currently. I'm like, okay, fine. What we're talking about is getting you out of that position almost immediately. Like, I would say within the next 30 days. And what do I mean getting out of that position? Well, just make sure you hear what I'm saying. Not to actually do the work. Like, if it's too complicated at the moment to have an outside person do money management, I'll just pick one of the five areas just to give an example. If right now it's just too complicated to get someone to actually manage your client's money in there, then fine, put that on the back burner, but you're still going to hire a money management subject matter expert for two expectations that have nothing to do with the day-to-day management of the client money. If you have to do that yourself for now, you can. What I'm talking about is the two client-facing expectations that you're going to have of every subject matter expert. And I'm actually getting ahead of myself, but I'll go ahead, since I brought it up, I'll tell you what they are. Every one of these five SMEs, you're going to bring them in and say, I need two things from you. I need you to create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy and update and keep it updated annually. Okay. So I need you to create an overarching strategy, keep it updated. And I need you and expect you to provide me with a minimum of 10 to 15 above average action items and recommendations per client per year. In other words, I need to be able to provide my clients with a minimum of 10 above average impressive action items from you, from the SME annually. Okay. So those are the two expectations. I'm going to dig more into that in a minute. Like, what do you mean by impressive? What do you mean above average? We'll cover all that. So, but for now, you need to build a team. Now, what's this 3 to 5 have to do with? Why 3 to 5? Why isn't it just 5? Well, because advisors invariably ask, and sometimes it's a budget issue, but they say, can I have one subject matter expert cover more than one area? And the answer is yes. So, but the rule in our methodology is yes, you can have a subject matter expert that covers more than one area of finance. They can cover 2 areas, but not 3. Okay. So if you have a subject matter expert, let's just say hypothetically, let's say you have a CPA that's a tax subject matter expert who is also capable of generating outstanding financial strategies or financial plans. Well, then, okay, then that one individual can cover both tax and financial planning subject matter expert roles. But then if they try to convince you, yes, I'm also an expert in money management, you go, uh-uh, you can cover 2, but you can't cover 3 roles, only 2. Okay. Why is that? Because we're trying to build a team and there is a value to the team beyond just the expertise. And it has to do with bouncing ideas off of each other and having a team in place to kind of work through client issues. So if you do the math on what I just said, you can have a subject matter expert that is an expert in 2 areas, but not 3. Well, let's say 4 of the areas are covered by 2 SMEs. Well, that leaves one other area for a third SME. So the minimum team that you can build in our methodology is a team of 3. But they've got to all agree to cover, they've got to agree to cover the 5 areas. So you've got to have all 5 areas covered by at least 3 team members. You follow me? Okay. Because one team member can be an expert in 2 areas, but not 3 in our system. All right. So I mentioned on a shoestring budget just to remind myself to tell you that you're responsible for paying for the administrative manager. That's, you're paying by the hour for, even if it's a part-time virtual assistant. Okay, you've got to cough that money up out of your budget. But all these subject matter experts, you don't have to have a budget for them because they don't get paid until you acquire an ideal client and they are then actually deploying your 2 expectations. So when they start creating an overarching strategy for a client, and they start developing these action items and recommendations for each client, then you pay them, but the client's already been hired. So the workflow is this. You work through client acquisition activities to acquire an ideal client. Now you've got an ideal client. They've paid you money. Now you have money in the bank to then go out and have your subject matter experts who you've already acquired start to deliver the 2 expectations that we've shared. So you don't pay the SMEs until the client's already paid you, is all I'm saying. So this whole building the team, I get so tired of hearing advisors saying, I can't afford to build a team right now. What are you talking about? You don't pay for the team. You line up the team and then you, when the clients hire you, now you have money to get the team working. Okay, so how does all this work? Well, in our methodology, you can fill all 5 subject matter expert roles on an interim basis in less than 30 days. Our office, like if I were to open up a branch office in your town, I could have a new team of 5 interim subject matter experts up and running in 2 weeks. So our methodology is designed to fill out your team, at least on an interim basis, with individuals, or maybe I should say professionals, who have above average technical skills. Our method will have you building your entire team out in less than 30 days, so that you will have all five team members in place immediately. And I'll tell you why that matters in a minute. But basically, now that you have a high level team in place, you can start generating more revenue almost immediately. And I'll show you how that works in a minute. But then that just buys you time. So yes, they are above average technical competence, but I promise you this, if you fill your team in 30 days or less with interim subject matter experts, you're going to start noticing little flaws in their ability and willingness to deliver service. So they'll work for now and it buys you time. But as you start seeing the chinks in their armor, then it buys you time so that you can implement our other documented process, which is called the 12-step deliverables team recruitment process. And that is one of the modules in this program. But once you've got the interim team in place, you can take your time, and one by one, you can go fill each one of these SME roles. You can replace the interim with a permanent person, a permanent professional, and it takes about 60 days for each role to fill on a permanent basis. Now, I will say this, cross your fingers and say a prayer, because if we're lucky, two and possibly maybe even three of your interim subject matter experts will be doing a great job, if we're lucky. If we're lucky, two or three of your interim SMEs are going to be doing a passable job, above average. You're happy with them for now. And so you don't have to fill those. Those are not vacancies. They're already filled with interim people that you will just, after going through the conversation, I mean, yes, you're going to go through the 12-step process with your interim team member, but if they want to be the permanent SME in that area, if it's something they desire and they fit the criteria, well, that's all I'm saying is if we're lucky, two or three of them will stay. Okay. And that means you'll have two or three that you're going to need to replace those vacancies with permanent people. And you can fill each one of those in less than 60 days. So I say less than 60 days, the average administrative manager fills those permanent vacancies in 45 days on average. Okay. And third, on these subject matter experts, you've got to set up what in the old days we used to call performance reviews. But keep in mind, these subject matter experts are contract labor. They're typically like a partner in a local tax accounting firm or a partner in a local estate planning law firm, you know. So these SMEs of yours are not employees. They are typically at a very high level over at their firm. Almost always we ask you to interview only people at partner level. So we don't call this job performance review because they would frankly not like that. And it probably isn't appropriate. What we do have is we've developed a process that we can train you in called the subject matter expert expectations conversations. So, okay, so we don't have performance reviews, but we do sit down at least three times a year, minimum once every 4 months with each SME one-on-one to say, here's what I expect. In other words, it's not a performance review per se, but it allows you to say, I expect this, I expect that. Clear, like you're going for clarity in these expectations conversations every 4 months. And you're in essence saying things like, you know, as I've mentioned before, I expect you to create and update a comprehensive written lifetime tax strategy annually. And I expect 10 to 15 impressive action items and recommendations for each client annually. Okay. So those two, but I also expect that that our clients' expectations are exceeded. So if you're doing these two things, but our clients are not happy, or we don't have adequate client satisfaction, well, then we're going to have to find new team members. But the point is, the SME expectations conversations is a requirement. It has to happen every 4 months without fail. If you currently have your subject matter experts in place, then I would just ask you, how many of them did you have an expectations conversation with in the last 4 months? It better be all of them. That's what I'm saying. You cannot have a team of subject matter experts and expect this model to succeed if you're not sitting down with them at least once every 4 months and laying out clearly your expectations. Okay. And then finally, the team goal. Most financial advisors who do have a team don't have a team goal. Well, I'll back it up. Most financial advisors don't have a team. So that immediately makes you different and better. Okay. But I will say a lot of very successful advisors do have a team. And what I'm saying is most of them, and I'm saying, you know, like the majority of them do not give their team any direction when it comes to stating in writing, here's the team goal. So you're going to do that. And this is what you're going to have the expectations conversation about every 4 months. The team goal is, it's our team goal to consistently exceed our clients' expectations. Period. Full stop. End of sentence. Simple. So you sit down every 4 months. Let's say you're sitting down with a tax subject matter expert and you're saying, you know, here's what I expect. I expect a comprehensive written lifetime tax strategy updated by you annually. I expect a minimum of 10 impressive action items and recommendations for each client annually. And I need you to make the case to me that you are contributing to the team goal. So we have a team goal. Every team member should want to contribute to the team goal. So I'm asking at every SME expectations meeting, you know, we met 4 months ago. Show me specifically what you have done in the intervening 4 months since the last time we sat down. What have you done to exceed client expectations? Like, just show me things you've done for every client to try to go a little bit above and beyond. And I'll cover it here. So the SME will say, what do you mean 10 impressive or 10 above average action items and recommendations? And I throw it back on them. I say, let's say I acquire a new client and the client had an old advisor at their old firm who has created a list of action items and recommendations for the client. So the good news is we have a new client, and the better news is we have the plan from the old advisor along with the action items attached to the plan that the old advisor provided the client. Now, here's my question. If you were looking down that list for the ones that are related to tax, in other words, your wheelhouse, if you're looking over all the previous advisor's action items for the client and you're just assessing them, do you think you could tell in your mind which of those action items were just routine, like every day, like even a kid right out of college would recommend some of these routine action items versus action items that really are a cut above? Like, they're not routine. They took a little bit of time and effort or thoughtfulness, and they represent going a little bit above and beyond the average effort for the average professional. Like, do you think you could tell the difference between a routine action item and an above average one? And if they're if your SME is skilled and experienced, they will say yes. And I will go further and say, if they say they can't, well, let me just put it out there. Your SME is not skilled sufficiently and not experienced enough. Okay. So it is possible that you have an SME that's not experienced and not skilled. Okay. Don't do that. make sure that everyone on your team is skilled and experienced. And then when you ask the question, if I showed you a bunch of action items from the previous advisor, could you pick out the ones that are routine versus the ones that are above average? And they say, yes. You go, that's what I'm asking for. So whenever you submit action items for a client, I need you to tell me, put an asterisk by the above average ones, somehow denote the ones that you feel are above average or impressive. You know, that the client should look at it and say, wow, that's impressive. Or the client says, hey, that's a great idea. I've never thought of that before. You know, that's why I hired your team, because your team is so impressive and above average. So anyway, that's what you say when an SME says, what do you mean above average or an impressive action item or recommendation? Well, that's what I mean. So when you hit them with the team goal and you say, our goal as a team is to consistently exceed client expectations, and then you sit down individually with each SME every 4 months and you go, okay, lay it on me. What have you, like, show me, what have you done over the last 4 months that you feel like is above average or impressive or should have been to the client? And let's review that. Let's see. And that's it on the subject matter experts. So we've covered building a team of at least three subject matter experts. Now let's talk about the 10 client deliverables. We have two modules on this. So if you have not received the modules on the 10 client deliverables, you're going to get them at some point. Here's a partial list of the modules that I send out to you in sequence. Here they are. It's the 10 client deliverable. You probably can't read that, but it says the 10 client deliverables, course 1 of 2 and course 2 of 2. So I cover the 10 client deliverables in this program. All right. So kind of picture the org chart. You've got the client, and then you're the single, simple, trusted advisor. You're the single, simple point of contact for the client on all financial issues. And then you've got your team of subject matter experts. All right. And it's those team of subject matter experts that are going to implement the 10 client deliverables. So I'm going to take this slow. And the first place I'm going to stop is for you to think about this. In the past, you were creating financial plans for the clients, and you were the one creating the action items and recommendations for the client. Well, at least on those two things, you're not going to be doing that anymore. The minute you have your interim team of subject matter experts that you've built in less than 30 days, now you are no longer playing in the orchestra. You may have been, you were playing first violin in the orchestra. You were probably playing the first seat in every instrument. Like if you were a one-man band doing financial plans all on your own, well, you were doing all the jobs. You were up conducting the orchestra and you were down playing every instrument. And now we're changing it. And this is Bill Bachrach's metaphor, by the way. I love this metaphor. So the minute you have your interim team in place, you step up on the lectern and you are now directing the orchestra. You are orchestrating this whole thing. And your administrative manager is coordinating this whole thing. So you're orchestrating, your administrative manager is helping coordinate all these five subject matter experts, and they are in the orchestra. So whereas you used to be first chair financial planning, now you've hired an interim subject matter expert who is going to create a financial strategy and provide at least 10 impressive action items and recommendations per year that are above average, okay? And for each of the areas, tax, money management, legal, I call it insurance. It's really risk and safety, but let's call it insurance for now. Okay, so you've got these five areas of personal finance. They're covered by, let's call it 3 to 5 people, not you. You're orchestrating them. You're going to provide them with what I'm going to call the 10 client deliverables. This is what we deliver in our module. You're going to explain to them, here are the 10 client deliverables. And then you're going to ask them to look at these 10 deliverables. And for each of those five areas of personal finance, you're going to ask them, you're going to ask your SMEs to create a checklist under each of the 10 client deliverables. And it's a checklist of, and you're just going to ask each SME, you know, for your area of finance, what are the checklist of things that need to get done every year to make sure that nothing falls through the cracks? And that's the key to the 10 client deliverables. It's to make sure nothing falls through the cracks. So we'll provide them with the 10 client deliverables. And then you're going to ask each of your five SMEs to then underneath the 10 client deliverables, create a checklist of items to be rotated through annually every year that represents, if you go through this checklist created by your SMEs, nothing will fall through the cracks. Now, and we call these checklists, we call these deliverables checkpoints in our system. So rather than calling it a checklist, which means different things to different people, once you have your SMEs create this checklist of things that need to happen every year so nothing falls through the cracks, we call those your proprietary deliverables checkpoints. And you may have heard in the past, either you heard me say it, or you may have heard Bill Bachrach or somebody else talking about me refer to the 142 deliverables checkpoints. What is that? Okay. Well, that's not yours. That's mine. So when I sat down with my team, my five subject matter experts, and I say, I am requiring you, each of you, to sit down and create a thorough checklist of whatever we need to go through on an annual basis to make sure nothing falls through the cracks. And then I'm going to combine all of those checklists together under the 10 client deliverables. Well, that's, for me, that was 142 checklist items. Okay. It's not to say that'll be the number for your team. When your team does this same exercise, which every team needs to go through this exercise because it helps you vet your team and see if they really know what they're doing or not. But once your team creates these checklist of items, you may have 97 deliverables checkpoints annually, or you might have 197 deliverables checkpoints annually. The point is, the number is not so critical. What's critical is that you insist that each of your five SMEs for the five areas of finance create a thorough checklist to be gone through annually for each ideal client so that nothing falls through the cracks. All right. So there we go. We've got a team in five. You've got a team built in five areas of finance. These are the 10 client deliverables. Let's move to the third certificate. Oh, and just to go back real quick, how do you assess yourself? So this is what we really need to make sure you're doing in this session today. So do you have this full team in place? It's a yes or no. If it's yes, then you can move on to the next certification point. If it's no, if you say no, Mark, I do not have at least three team members covering all five areas of personal finance. And I hear this all the time. It's like, oh yeah, I've got a team, Mark. I've got four of the areas covered by other team, like an outside accountant and an outside estate planning lawyer, but I'm still the financial planning SME. And I'm like, you can't check this one off. You can actually still do the financial planning for actual live ideal clients, but you don't understand. You've missed the point. You're hiring, even if it's on an interim basis, you're hiring a certified financial planner to just do these two things, to create the documented, the, let's call it the comprehensive written lifetime financial planning strategy, which is focused on the client's goals and objectives, okay? You're going to hire someone outside to create that written strategy and to generate a minimum of 10 impressive action items and recommendations on an annual basis. And by the way, those you're asking every SME to come up with 10 per year action items for the client, but it can be in any area. It doesn't have to be like just financial planning or just tax or whatever their narrow field is. No, it's open game. Any recommendation that they can see that would improve this client's overall financial affairs, fair game. You'll accept any recommendation from any SME, even if it's crossover areas, like the tax SME has a financial planning recommendation, or the estate planning or SME has a risk and safety or, you know, insurance recommendation. That's fine. They can cross-pollinate, no problem. But you're expecting for each of the five areas of personal finance to have a minimum of 10 impressive action items and recommendations. So if you don't have this team built, it puts a lot of stress on you as the advisor to come up with those action items on your own. So focus on first things first. Do you have an administrative manager who's effective? Check. Okay. Do you have all five SME areas filled by someone other than you, at least on an interim basis? If it's not a check, you stop everything and you just focus on that. All this getting ahead and doing other things. No, you're just, you've lost focus. You've lost direction. It's definitely in sequence. You need to get this team built. Get your administrative manager in place. Get your five subject matter experts in place. Okay. Then do you have the 10 client deliverables alive and active? And what that means is that you've given your SMEs, the team that see why you need to have them in place. You've given your SMEs the 10 client deliverables because we provide that to you from this program. And then you task them with coming up with a thorough list of checklist items that have to be gone through on an annual basis, or else something might fall through the cracks. So have you received a thorough checklist from each of your five SMEs that guarantees in your mind that nothing's going to fall through the cracks for any client? Okay. If you have not done that, you stop right there and you don't go forward until you get that done. That's what this certification is all about. And so now you know. So now we're on to comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. So this is where, you know, many of you just call this the financial plan. Please don't ever use that term again. We call it a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, or overarching strategy for short. But, you know, the reality is financial plan means different things to different people. And even if a firm offers financial plans for their clients, what the firm has in mind and what the clients have in mind are two totally separate things. I promise you, because I've got data on this. And so let's just stick to our lingo for now. Are you creating for every new ideal client and for those non-ideal clients who have the money to pay for it? Are you creating what we call a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy? And for ideal clients, at least, they are updated annually. Okay. Is this happening? If so, check it off, go to the next thing, and we'll go through it in a minute. But if not, you need to halt right here and not move anywhere until you get this done. So my question is, what questions do you have for me to get this done? Now, we've covered this in a number of past webinars. You can go back and find them in the previous webinars. Or if you have a question about this, you can get with me. I don't know if you can read this, but this is directly from the previous webinars. This is a this is the inventory checklist of a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, the way we've designed it. I've got data on this. The reason that it is structured in this precise way, and the reason you deliver it in this exact manner, is because the data that I have on it means that you should be charging a minimum of $10,000 for this strategy. And I recommend that you charge $20,000. So whether you're charging $10,000 or $20,000 for what you used to call a financial plan, now you see why we need to call it something different, because it's a different animal. It's a way higher level. And the question is, and now you've got a team, even if you've hired an interim team of subject matter experts, you're going to have to pay them. So you want this to be a minimum 50% margin. No problem. If you're charging $20,000 for every overarching strategy your team creates, well, then you're pocketing $10,000 net earnings for every financial, what you used to call a financial plan. Now, I know I hear it all the time. Maybe you're saying, yeah, well, Mark, I don't charge 10. I'm not really comfortable charging 10, but I am charging 5. I mean, I used to charge 3. So it's pretty good that I'm charging 5. No, I'm saying make the commitment, get your interim team in place, because I recommend you don't do this comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy until you have that team in place. So steps are these: get your team of 5 interim subject matter experts who are above average technical competence, get them in place within 30 days. Now you can create a comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy that you could charge $20,000 for, and the client's going to be fine with it. Now, I'm not going to go through the detail of this. You can go back to past webinars and go through this. I'm just going to hit the thing that matters the most. Like, what are these 5 subject matter experts doing? Well, each of them is going to be creating a separate document. So your tax accountant is going to be creating a comprehensive written lifetime tax strategy. Your money management subject matter expert is going to be creating a comprehensive written lifetime money management strategy. And the other SME, you know, insurance expert is going to be creating a risk and safety strategy, independent document. Your estate planning lawyer is going to be creating an estate planning strategy. And your financial planner, your certified financial planner, is going to be creating a comprehensive written lifetime financial planning strategy focusing on the client's goals and objectives. So you're going to have 5 full separate documents, each created by an expert, a specialist in that narrow field. It's going to be a comprehensive plan, each of them. And then you're going to combine them, and I'll show you how to do this later, but you'll have your team merge these into a seamless, simple document. But you see now that you've got 5, it's not just 1 financial plan, it's 5 overarching strategies in each of the areas of personal finance that matter, okay? And then on top of that, a bunch of reports that we've got data that the clients are looking for. And so between those handful of reports that we show you how to generate and these 5 plans, you could charge $20,000 to a multimillionaire and they're going to be fine with it. And and here's the main point. If you don't come across many ideal clients, let me tell you what you will come across. You will come across non-ideal clients, but non-ideal clients who have enough money to be able to afford a $10,000 or $20,000 financial plan. So imagine this cadence. You get into a routine where you're adding maybe 1 ideal client a month, but you're being hired by 2 or 3 non-ideal clients to create this plan where let's just say you're cranking out, you know, $10,000 net earnings on every one of these overarching strategies, and you're not doing the work. You have handed that over to these 5 interim SMEs. So you may be actually doing the money management and financial planning behind the scenes for the actual ideal clients, but as far as the comprehensive written lifetime financial planning strategy and the action items and recommendations being produced to be shown to the client, those have been outsourced to an interim financial planning SME or money management SME. So it's anyway, the quicker you get your interim SME team together, the sooner you can start charging top dollar for financial strategies for your team to create. And the client fees are going to drive multi 6-figure revenue for you. Okay. So let me just we're over time. So let me just fly through this. So what I want you to assume for now is what I just said. Let's say for every 10 initial client interviews you have, in other words, you have 10 initial meetings with a potential client for the very first time. I call this the initial client interview. If like me, you use Bill Bachrach's financial roadmap, this would be for every 10 financial roadmap experiences. Assume for now that you'll acquire one ideal client. That's average. My numbers were actually a little better than that. As I look back over the entirety of my career, it's for every 7.8 financial roadmaps, I acquired one ideal client. But for now, just figure every 10 initial client interviews with a new potential client, you'll get one ideal client, and you'll get at least two non-ideal clients who are able to afford to hire you to pay a $10,000 minimum client fee in order to get their financial strategy created by your team. Okay. All right, so we've covered team of three. You've built your team of three in five areas. You've got the 10 client deliverables nailed down along with the checkpoints underneath it that drive those 10 deliverables. You've now implemented the comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy. Now, are you using the three meeting process? Okay, so let's go through the three meeting process quickly. There are other webinars where I go through this in a lot greater detail. Let's just say this, and this applies only to ideal clients, all right? So for every ideal client, you have the three meeting process booked out 12 months in advance at all times. You notice at the top of this is the initial client interview. That's the first time you sit down with a new potential client. I call that the financial roadmap. But then you have two meetings after that, implementation meeting and the initial progress update meeting to complete their overarching strategy. In other words, you're going to give your team time to create this comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy, and then you release them into the routine three meeting process. That's called the comprehensive safety review. So let's just kind of look it up. If you look at the days elapsed in between these meetings, how long are you giving your team to create this comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy? Well, if you add them all up, it's 104 days. Okay, so you're giving your team like over a quarter of a year to get this $10,000 or $20,000 financial strategy like created. All right, so you're giving them ample time to do their best work and produce an overarching strategy that's worth a lot of money, a lot more than the average advisor charges. And then you release the client into the routine three meeting process. That means you're meeting three times a year, once every 4 months, forever. So we call this delivering truly comprehensive financial services. So every 4 months, you're meeting with a client. Each of those meetings has a specific agenda. You're rotating through the agendas that we've created for these meetings. But more to the point, behind the scenes, you're going through those annual checklists from each of the SMEs so that every time you complete a 12-month circuit, in other words, 12 months has elapsed, you've checked off all the deliverables checkpoints that your SMEs have created and are assuring you that if we check all these boxes in the every year, nothing will fall through the cracks with any client. Okay, so all meetings booked out a year, you give your team 104 days to create the strategy, and then you have a routine client progress meeting once every 4 months forever. All right. Oh, by the way, in this three meeting process, where does the advisor pact pledge go? It's right here. Occasionally, I'll make my pledge during the initial client interview, but that's rare. We have it built into the agenda for the implementation meeting. So after the client's paid and the first meeting that you're having with a client after they've paid you, then you conduct the advisor pact pledge. And you make the four promises, we call these the four expectations, that are guaranteed to make you the only game in town. I mean, if you are actually living up to these four pledges, protection, attention, coordination, transparency, then statistically, the odds are zero that a client can find any other advisor in your community to deliver financial services at the level that you're offering. So you have all of a sudden become the only game in town. And so you're unique and better than any other advisor in your community because you have made this pledge and you're delivering on it. Okay, so you've built your team. You have all five areas covered by other team members. You've got the 10 client deliverables covered because you've made your SMEs create checklists for an annual checklist. You are now delivering a high level of what you used to call a financial plan. You're now charging a minimum of $10,000. And if not, you're going to stop right there until you do. But you've implemented the three-meeting process. All those meetings are currently in place for the next 12 months. And we've got two more and then we're done. You have 45 impressive, what we call above average action items and recommendations per ideal client over the past 12 months. Okay, let's talk about that one. I'm just going to say, since we've already talked about it, when you're sitting down in a subject matter expert expectations conversation and you're being clear with them about what you expect, you're going to use these words. I expect fill in the blank. You're not going to go on and on and on and on describing what you expect. You're going to make it short and sweet like this. You're going to look your SME, each of them, in the eye and say, I expect from you 10 to 15 impressive client action items or recommendations for each ideal client annually. And to say it a different way, I would say, so therefore I expect 15 from you, but the bare minimum is 10. So when we look over the course of any year and we're counting up how many impressive action items came from you, it's got to be at least 10. If I were to say it another way, given that we have the three-meeting process and we're meeting with clients every 4 months, let me say the same thing a third way. Let me say that since we meet with ideal clients three times a year, I'm going to be expecting a minimum of 3 impressive action items or recommendations prior to every dry run prep meeting. And the dry run prep meeting is just a 20-minute internal meeting a week before the client progress meeting. So what you're really saying here is, I expect from you a minimum of three impressive action items prior to every client progress meeting. Okay. So that's it. So think about this. You're getting 3 from each of the 5 areas of SMEs. Okay. So you get 3 from tax and 3 from money management and so forth. If you're getting a minimum of 3 impressive above average action items prior to every client progress meeting, that means you're going into the meeting with the client armed with 15 impressive action items per client per meeting. You follow me? You want to talk about consistently exceeding client expectations? I've done this for this whole century. I started this in January of 2000, this methodology, and I've been delivering on this for 23 years. I still have a handful of clients that I'm maintaining. And let me tell you, when you're delivering 15 impressive action items at every meeting and you're meeting 3 times a year, this tips beyond exceeding client expectations over into could be slightly overwhelming for some clients that there's so much recommendations. And so that's an elegant problem. So let's just keep moving. So you've got your team of 3 in all 5 areas. You've got the 10 client delivers covered by your SME's annual checklist. You've got the comprehensive written lifetime financial strategy because each of your 5 SMEs is updating an independent strategy for each of these 5 areas annually. You've got the 3-meeting process booked a year in advance. Now you've got, it should be 50. So you're asking for 10. The reason it's 45 is I assume there will be some turnover every year. Maybe one SME role is not working out. Therefore, you have a little turnover. So what I have data on is if you are providing over 40 impressive action items, you'll be exceeding your clients' expectations statistically. So yes, will you have a client here and there that's not impressed? Yeah, sure. There are some real fussy people out there. So, but statistically, it's zero. If you'll do this one right here, you'll be exceeding client expectations on a consistent basis. Now, finally, you've implemented what we call the monthly referability dashboard. TARR, which is the annual referral rate, is greater than 3. And you're adding one ideal client, at least one ideal client every 2 consecutive quarters. Now, this is just for certification. Let me tell you what I think your standard should be. I think you need to get these 6 things implemented and then hold yourself to this standard that you should be acquiring one ideal client per month. I mean, it could be one every 2 months, but that would be rare. So if your goal is to acquire one ideal client a month, okay, are you going to be upset at the end of the year if you acquired 10 instead of 12? Maybe you had a couple months off, you know, like not up to your level of the game. So I'm just saying your goal should be one ideal client a month and 2 non-ideal clients per month. So 2 clients that you're charging at least $10,000 for an overarching strategy. But let's look at this monthly referability dashboard. I want to start with the calculation. So this TARR is a very, 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 very simple calculation. It's just the total number of your ideal clients divided by the total number of, it's the total number of ideal client referrals. So over a 12-month period, you look back 12 months. How many ideal client referrals have you received over the past 12 months? So you take the number of ideal client referrals over the past 12 months and divide by the total number of ideal clients. That is the annual referral rate. So the target is 3. To be certified, you need to be generating 3 referrals per client. So let's say you have 10 ideal clients. If this TARR for you is 3, that means when you take the total number of ideal client referrals over the last year, divide by the total number of ideal clients, you're getting on average 3 referrals per client per year. That's 30. You tell me, how would your business change if you were getting more than 30 referrals from your ideal clients annually? Okay. So that's the calculation. Let me show you, and I'm going to fly through this. This is an Excel spreadsheet. Are you telling me I didn't have that up the whole time? My PowerPoint is acting up a little today, and I think it's dragging, but here's the calculation. Total number of ideal client referrals over the last 12 months divided by the total number of ideal clients. There's your TARR. That's the annual referral rate. Now, if you have a lot of non-ideal clients, I have advisors all the time saying, Mark, I've got a lot of profitable non-ideal clients. And frankly, I get more referrals from my profitable non-ideal clients than I do from my ideal clients. I'm like, oh, drives me crazy. Because that's probably that you haven't implemented all these certification requirements. But leave that aside. Okay, it's okay to track your non-ideal clients and your ideal clients for this TARR. The only thing I ask is track them separately. So you've got how many total number of non-ideal client referrals over the last 12 months divided by the total number of non-ideal clients. That's going to give you your rate. And then you have the number of ideal client referrals divided by the total number of ideal clients over the last 12 months. That's your rate. Okay. So now let's look at the actual referability dashboard. Again, this is a spreadsheet that we provide you. You don't have to create this dashboard. We create this for you. And the entry into the spreadsheet to create this dashboard is super simple. Your administrative manager will monitor this. It's literally the only time you update this spreadsheet is when a client provides you a referral. So an ideal client gives you a referral to someone else. It's either solicited or unsolicited. So either the client told you about it or they just called you out of the blue. But either way, you've got a new referral from a client. Your administrative manager will go in and put the name of that individual and the date. Okay. And that's pretty much it. And this, and so this, I kept this one. Notice the date's December of 2017. I figuratively framed this one because it was so high. And so what does this mean? This advisor is telling me that for every ideal client he has received over the last 12 months, 12.97 referrals per client. Per client. That's what made this one so impressive. They submitted this to me. We went through and audited it. I made sure that it was for real. And it was. This advisor implemented everything that we recommend. And flash forward, it was a few years, but several years later, we asked for, we asked for them to submit this referability dashboard. Let's just kind of do a spot check and see how you're doing. They sent this through to me and I'm like, you have got to be kidding me. So my numbers, just so you know, ran between 8 and 10, occasionally with gusts up to 11. This is really good. Like what if you received 12.9 referrals on average from every one of your clients, how would that affect your business? So let me just fly through these other numbers, see if it makes sense. I'll blow this one up. So this is called referrals received last month. This is just the count. So in this particular advisor, they received 20 referrals the last month. That would have been November of that year. And then this pie chart showing and how many of them were solicited versus how many were not solicited. So on this monthly referability dashboard, it was 68% were unsolicited of the 20. Okay, this is called participation rate. Now, what on earth is participation rate? I'm having a tongue twister on participation rate. Sorry about that. So what is the participation rate? It means of all your clients, what percentage of them participated in giving you referrals over the last 12 months? Okay. So I'll say it again. What percentage of your clients actually provided you at least one referral over the last 12 months? Well, in this case, 60%. So 40% of his clients were not even referring even one. And he still had over 12 referrals per client on average. Now, the goal is 85%. So, but that's just a goal. But the point is, if you do nothing, I'm curious what it is. So if you do a look back right now, what percentage of your total client community provided even one referral over the last 12 months. You should be tracking this, even if you're not using this spreadsheet. So I'll kind of fly by this. This is clients not referring at all, zero participation rate. It's just a graph showing, you know, how the number of clients not referring at all went down over the last 12 months. Kind of going over to the other side of this dashboard, impressed ideal clients. So this graph shows impressed ideal clients. What are impressed ideal clients? I have defined any client who provides three or more referrals in any 12-month period. I'm calling that an impressed client. So when I tell my SMEs, I want you to provide a minimum of 10 impressive action items annually. What I mean is impressive to the clients. Well, now we get to see that's the leading indicator. So the leading indicator is how many impressive action items did your SMEs actually produce over the last 12 months. And this is the lagging indicator. So then how many over the last 12 months, how many of your clients were actually impressed? Well, by my way of measuring, you know, this is the measure of that. So anyway, you get the idea. And so this is what we call quality of referrals. So when a referral is received, oftentimes, let's say it's an unsolicited client referral, the phone rings, you're talking to this person, they want to sit down and schedule a meeting to talk business with you. They were kind enough to say that they were referred from one of your good clients, so you know that much. But do you really know the quality of this referral? I mean, until you sit down with them often, you do not know whether this referral is a potential ideal client or are they a potential non-ideal client, okay? And so we just call, when we don't know, we just call it a potential client. We don't know whether it's potential ideal or non-ideal. So what this is saying is 33% of the referrals last month were potential ideal clients. And that's a good thing to know. I mean, what if the percentage of referrals that you received last month and month after month, every month, was only 1% of the referrals are ever potential ideal clients? In other words, the referrals are great, but the quality of the referrals is maybe quite low. Well, that's what this is measuring. And we have a tactic for that called fishing in the right ponds. We have a process for going out and finding new circles for you to run in an attempt to increase the concentration of potential ideal clients in the circles that you're running in. So anyway, that's that one. That's quality of referrals. And then last but not least, the 80-20 of your referrals. Like if you don't make any effort to impress your clients, your distribution of referrals will be approximately 80-20. The question is this: What percentage of your ideal clients is responsible for your referrals? And if you don't do anything, it should be 80-20. In other words, 20% of your ideal clients produce 80% of your referrals. That's if you do nothing. I told my team, I don't like that. That shows we're not even trying. That's normal. Okay. I'm looking for 80-80. I want 80% of our referrals to come from 80% of our clients. That means for all the clients, you're making an effort to exceed their expectations. But anyway, you get the idea. So, and then there's a dashboard at the bottom, just sort of summing up numbers for the previous 12 months, and it's on everywhere. So there's the referability dashboard. So I just want you to assess your progress. Do you have all five SMEs in place? Have you required each SME to create an annual checklist so nothing falls through the cracks? Are you charging a minimum of $10,000 for what you used to call a financial plan? Are you using the 3-meeting process and are you booked out 12 months at all times? And has every SME provided a minimum of 10 impressive action items for each ideal client over the past 12 months? And finally, how many ideal clients have you acquired over the past 12 months? So what's that referability dashboard all about? It's to exceed your clients' expectations, which results in vastly large numbers of referrals, which then drives new client acquisition and new business revenue. So I'm telling you that I think your goal should be 1 ideal client a month and 2 profitable non-ideal clients per month. But what is it? Like, you tell me, how many ideal clients have you acquired over the past 12 months? Is it 10 or more? Is it 4 or more? 1? You tell me. So the point of all this is, as I've been saying all along, this certification represents a checklist in sequence. And if you will not move on to the next checklist item until you've wrapped up the previous one, you'll be in good shape. Okay. And that's it for this month. I do always like to mention, if you go into your browser address bar and just type in mastery.link, you will come up with a lexicon that you can download for your team, which represents all the weird and unique language that we use in this method. So in just today, I mentioned dry run prep meetings. So you may be wondering, what is a dry run prep meeting? You could go on the lexicon. Anybody on your team, if you download this, could go on that lexicon and get the answer to that question. So, and the reason I have you download your own version is because whether you admit it or not, you've got unique lingo in your office. I was just talking to an advisor yesterday, and his administrative manager was telling me, "Oh yeah, we have to update our checklist for the FRMP meeting." And I'm like, "What's an FRMP meeting?" So I promise you, you've got abbreviations and lingo in your office, and that's why I have you download it. You can just merge yours in with mine so that all mine are listed, but you can add yours to that. Also, my best advice, I always say this every month, I have provided you a folder with a tracking spreadsheet. If you don't know where it is, just shoot me an email or go into the Advisor Pack Monthly, click Contact Us, and ask my team to send you a link to it. But you have a tracking spreadsheet, the one that I used myself when I was in client acquisition mode. I recommend that you spend 5 minutes a week updating that business activity spreadsheet every week. That if you do, I'll be able to help you more. If you don't, I don't know. I'll wonder how serious you are about all of this. Also, I mentioned the Contact Us link. If you pull down from where you see your name when you're logged into the Advisor Pack Monthly, if you pull that little menu down, you can click Contact Us. If it's a question for my team, like after today, if you say, "Oh my gosh, I want to see those 10 client deliverables. I haven't gotten those modules yet." You could contact us and send a message to my team. You know, Mark talked about the 10 client deliverables. I'd like to get that module like immediately. And so you can request to take modules out of order. But my point is, that's to my team. So if you have a technical or something to do with the program, you can type in your request. But if it's a question for me, you'll see right on the Contact Us form, if the question's for Mark, you in essence click that link and it'll take you here. And that's what I need. I need you to explain to me your question rather than try to type it out in an email. Trust me, you can explain it better than I can, than reading an email that took you 30 minutes to write. Just spend 2 or 3 or 4 minutes explaining the situation. I promise you, I'll grasp it better that way. So just click the link to give Mark a message, hit the orange start button, and just explain to me what it is that your question is. And that's it. That's the Advisor Pact monthly session for this month. As always, I wish you all the best in implementing, and we'll see you next month.